Hello, hello, lovely listeners.
All of you ghouls and goblins.
And everything in between. Welcome to Across the Veil with Zelda.
And Emma.
Hi, Emma.
Hi, Zelda.
So good to be recording in person again.
We live together.
I know, but it's still much better than doing it.
Always exciting.
Well, today we're going to be talking about an American cryptid.
Ooh. Some USA-based cryptids.
I think we're going to hit a lot of places that we haven't really covered before.
I think we are,
which is exciting.
And also bringing us back to our roots, our cryptid roots.
Yeah, y'all, we're going back to cryptids, babies.
Y'all thought that we don't do cryptids anymore? Wrong. Wrong. They hold a beautiful place in our heart, and we will share that with you.
Well, our American cryptids today are the Melonheads. Legends of this... Well, legends of these creatures, this community, they're pretty much human, so I calling them cryptids is like, but...
It's a little dicey.
It's a little dicey, because they were human at some point.
Ooh.
So stories come mostly from Michigan, Ohio, and Connecticut. But don't worry, I'm going to give you a rundown of all three. It's a little treat.
Ooh, a treat.
I knew about the Michigan version of this cryptid because that's where my other grandmother lives.
Hey, yo, my grandmother lives in Connecticut. Grandmother connection.
I wanted to do some research centered in Michigan because we've already creeped out my grandmother in Fresno. So I thought, let's scar more of my family with tales of creepy crawlies in their backyards.
I think that's an excellent idea.
That's what family's all about.
Creeping them out. That's all I do.
Well, now you can tell your Connecticut grandmother all of these creepy crawlies.
Mm.
Before we get started, I just wanted to say Michigan is my favorite American state only because it looks like a mitten. That is the only reason. At Louisiana, close second, because it looks like a boot. It's a boot. Every state that is shaped like a square, do better.
Pennsylvania kind of looks like a fish.
Ooh.
Yeah, I like to think of it as a fish-looking state.
Something fishy going on there.
Oh, yeah. And it's the squonk.
Speaking of shapes, let's start with some folklore from Ohio, which is a state that I have no idea where the fuck it is.
It's right next to Pennsylvania.
I'm gonna be honest, I'm picturing in my mind's eye, do not know where the fuck Pennsylvania is either.
Oh my god.
In all honesty, if I saw an unlabeled map of the United States, couldn't point out Ohio, couldn't point out Pennsylvania. But could you point out Singapore?
Maybe.
Damn.
I think I could. It's off of Malaysia.
Yeah.
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 So once I find Malaysia.
But where's Malaysia?
Asia.
Let's start with Ohio.
Okay.
So the stories from Ohio are really interesting because they introduce the character of Dr. Crow.
That's a sick name.
A mad scientist.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's cinematic.
Fuck
that's
yeah.
Cinematic that's as hell.
Beautiful.
And it's spelled a lot of different ways, like the traditional bird, C-R-O-W, but there's also a K in there sometimes, and it really depends on the region how unique they want to get with the spelling of crow. But great fucking name. Most of the Melonhead stories center around a suburb of Cleveland called Kirtland, where the nefarious Dr. Crow had some sort of facility where he ran experiments. It is said that the Melonheads were orphans who had been taken in by the doctor, but he was certainly not a caretaker. He would perform experiments on the children, most often injecting mixtures of chemicals into their brains, which caused their heads to swell and lose all hair. Thus, Melonheads, due to the misshapen nature of the children's craniums.
Woof.
Right? Like,
that's
ooh.
Darker than I expected.
Yep. I'm going to be real. I was doing research and I was like, oh.
This is Zelda's darkest episode, everyone.
These experiments obviously made the orphans go mad. And one day they decided to kill Dr. Crow and burn down the facility. After years of abandonment and abuse, the children were afraid to enter society, terrified of what the townspeople would do to them. It's said that they ran into the forest and started their own home in the woods near Crybaby Bridge. Away from the other humans, the Melonheads resorted to inbreeding. The next generations of the original Melonhead kids have become so paranoid about other humans that they have taken to killing and eating any traveler who crosses their paths. So while most Melonhead stories were popularized in the 60s and the 70s, Ohio's versions had an online renaissance on websites like Creepy Cleveland and Dead Ohio, where people have shared their own stories and encounters. There was even a film released in 2010 called Legend of the Melonheads. And we haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's pretty creepy based on the source material.
I'm gonna assume it's got like a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes max.
Here's a PSA to filmmakers. Make some good cryptid shit.
Because all of the cryptid movies out there are just not great.
They're not great, and I don't know why they're not great.
I think it's because they don't stick to the source material.
The source material's usually creepy as hell, but I think people, when they're making movies, they want a definite, is this real or is it not? And part of the fun of cryptids is you never quite know.
Exactly.
People are too scared to do an ending that's like, you'll never know if it was the spooky townspeople, or maybe the squonk is real.
Maybe the squonk is real.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to believe it. If I were to worship a deity.
Squonk?
Squonk.
Well, so next up, we have a few versions from Connecticut. The towns of Trumbull, Shelton, Stratford, and Monroe are the primary locations of many of these stories, but there are variants from Seymour, Easton, Weston, Oxford, Milford, and Southbury. There are two main story variations. The first centers around an asylum in Fairfield County. The asylum housed the criminally insane until it suspiciously burned down in the autumn of 1960. The charred bodies of all the staff and most of the patients were recovered, but the remains of about 15 inmates were never found. It is said that they escaped into the woods, but they couldn't get the smell of burning flesh out of their heads, so they resorted to cannibalism in the harsh Connecticut winter. This caused their offspring to develop hydrocephalus. The other popular version of the story says that the Melonheads were a colonial-era family from the Shelton-Trumbull area who were accused of witchcraft and banished to the woods. Again, inbreeding caused their strange swelled heads.
Classic.
And lack of knowledge of the outside world made them feral and very dangerous to any travelers in the woods. See, the threads are coming through. There's always weird head shapes and inbreeding.
Mm-hmm. And the woods.
Exactly.
Dangerous.
Dangerous to travelers, which, you know, the woods are dangerous anyway. Who knows what's in there?
Who knows? Could be the squonk.
Squonk ain't gonna hurt you, though.
Nah, he'd just cry. If you don't know what we're talking about, listen to our squonk episode.
Please do. Finally, we got the stories from Michigan. Like with the stories from Ohio, most of the lore comes from the 60s and 70s, but has found current popularity through mentions of fellow cryptozoologists on Reddit and other online forums. The stories of the Melonheads from each state share the description of large bulbous heads, and many stories cite this as being a form of hydrocephalus. So it looks like it's time for a science lesson.
Science.
Hydrocephalus is a condition where the brain has a buildup of cerebrospinal fluid. This causes pressure inside of the skull. In older people, symptoms may show as headaches, double vision, balance issues, incontinence, personality changes, and other mental impairments. But in children or babies, it develops as a rapid increase in head size. You know, because adult bones are more fused than children's? Because adults have 206 bones while children have about 300. Skull fusion usually happens at around 2 years of age. And I can tell you, skull fusion is one of the coolest band names we've come up with while researching for this podcast.
Oh shit, you're right.
Skull fusion?
Skull fusion.
All of us have gone through skull fusion.
Yeah, we have.
Give yourself a knock on the top of your head. You're not gonna touch any brain matter. You fused.
Hopefully.
All of this to say, hydrocephalus is more common in younger patients, but other symptoms include vomiting, sleepiness, seizures, and a downward pointing of the eyes. Hydrocephalus occurs due to birth defects, or can happen later in life due to a variety of medical complications, including meningitis, brain tumors, traumatic brain injuries, intraventricular hemorrhage, and subarachnoid hemorrhage. There are four main types of hydrocephalus, and it can mostly be diagnosed through physical examination and medical imaging. Descriptions of hydrocephalus date back more than 2,000 years from the famous Hippocrates.
Hey!
In fact, the word hydrocephalus comes from the Greek words meaning water and head. So the condition occurs in about 1 in every 1,000 newborns, but is usually easily treatable, with most patients going on to live full and happy lives.
Yay!
Not the Melonheads. The Michigan Melonheads were said to be children who had contracted hydrocephalus and were being treated at the Junction Insane Asylum near Felt Mansion. This version of the story has the Melonheads suffering years of physical and mental abuse at the asylum, but they escaped into the heavily forested areas around it when funding ran out and the asylum closed down. Which, how does that happen?
Oh, it happens all the time.
I know, but I'm so mad about that. Like, how do we let that happen as a society? Like, funding runs out?
Like, the state chooses what they find to be the most useful, and mental health is often pushed to the side, which makes me enraged. Like, Pennhurst Asylum.
Tragic.
Yeah. Horrific, horrific things happened there in Pennsylvania.
And I'm just upset about all of it. Do you know how many of these stories we could circumvent if we had better care for our mentally ill and aging patients?
Yeah. And it spreads the idea of danger as well sometimes.
Lack of understanding is really the villain of these stories.
Goddamn right.
Not the incestual cannibals.
No, let them live.
So these traumatized and now feral children took up residence around Felt Mansion. And once again, very dangerous to come across due to them being horribly abused and now wary of outsiders.
Again, understandable.
Totally understandable.
I totally get it.
Now, the County Historical Society says that an asylum has never existed in that area. Which, you know, stories gotta make up fabulous locations. But there was a prison.
Ooh.
There was a prison.
There was a prison.
And weird shit happens at prisons all the time, because that's another place that we send people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, funding runs out.
Yep.
And we don't regulate enough.
We send them and then we just try to forget. And it's messed up.
I'm just saying, these are other human lives.
Mm-hmm.
Some versions of the story say that the children lived in the Felt Mansion and they cut up the doctor who harmed them into little pieces and scattered his remains around the large manor. I think that's a great way to deal with somebody who hurts you.
Yeah.
Cut them up into little pieces, scatter them around, confetti.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Other versions say they escaped into a series of tunnels and caverns that were left behind when a zoo was demolished. There are rumors of teenagers breaking into Felt Mansion who saw ghosts of the children.
So, insane asylum, not real, Felt Mansion is real?
Yes.
Okay.
Insane asylum, not real, Felt Mansion was real. I'm about to do some history of Felt Mansion, actually.
I'm excited.
Apparently, according to some ghost hunters, I say this, ghost hunters, little fingies. They've seen a pantomime in the shadows on the wall of the children dismembering the doctor and scattering him around.
Sure,
like, so they didn't see ghosts, but they saw shadows.
Yeah.
Shadow puppets. Which I've never heard of before. Yep. But how cool and how horrifying would that be to see?
I love the idea that they died and then they decided to put on a show.
There's even a 2011 film called The Melonheads based around some of these stories' variants. But Felt Mansion was such a cool name for a supposedly haunted mansion where remains were scattered around that I thought I'd delve a little deeper into that as well. So the man who had the house built was named Dorr Felt, and he was born in 1862 somewhere near Beloit, Washington. He made all of his money after moving to Chicago and became a foreman at a rolling mill, and eventually inventing a machine that helped his accountants. Let's go, Dorr Felt!
Yeah, go, you go, Dorr Felt. What a weird name.
He married a woman named Agnes in 1891, and together they had four daughters. The family visited Michigan in the early 1900s and fell in love with the area. They purchased the lot that now houses Felt Mansion in 1962, and the house was built by Grand Rapids architectural firm of Frank P. Allen and Son in 1928. Agnes Felt suddenly and unexpectedly died that same year, and while Dorr married soon after, he died just 2 years later in 1930, leaving the house to his children until it was sold in 1949 to the Chicago Provenance of the Augustinian Order of the Catholic Church, who turned it into a school, with the mansion serving as a chapel that housed clergy and students. This sounds like a backstory for a haunted fucking house.
It does. It really does.
I can't believe she died in 1928. He married somebody and then died 2 years
just
later.
Immediately died.
Immediately married somebody else and then immediately died.
Man, that new wife was really taken on a roller coaster.
I'm saying it right now. Yeah. Agnes was like, Dorr, you better not. He said, I'm gonna.
And she said, I'm gonna be watching.
You're coming back to me, Dorr.
You thought you could escape, Dorr?
So some myths of the Melonheads said that they were students at this school, and that the term Melonhead referred to their education level because they were at a private school, so they were the smarter children in the area.
Oh, okay.
So Melonheads.
Yeah, nerds.
Nerds!
Yeah.
The state of Michigan purchased the building in 1977, where it was used as a police post and a correctional facility until 1991, when the prison was closed and sold to the township for just $1.
It's a bargain.
A haunted bargain. House for a dollar? I'd buy that.
Black Friday deals are getting crazy.
The property is now listed at the National Register of Historic Places. Many people say the place is haunted. Once you've been a Catholic school and a correctionals facility, it's gotta be haunted.
If I believed in ghosts.
That's where they would be.
That's where they would be.
Legends say that the best way to see something lurking about is to drive up to the mansion and flick your car's headlights on and off 3 times. And then wait for something inquisitive to come out of the shadows and investigate you.
Ooh, I love that. I love that little switcheroo.
Yeah, they're coming. The melonheads are looking for you now. Oh, they've spent their time. But yeah, so that's an American cryptid.
Keep an eye out.
Yeah, keep an eye out.
To any of our Connecticut, Ohio, Michigan listeners.
Have you seen creepy things in your woods?
And do they have melon-like heads? That's all we have for today, but we'll talk to you guys again soon. In the meantime, we have a promo from our friends at Least Haunted Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Least Haunted Podcast, a place where science, skepticism, humor, and anthropology meet to discuss all things spooky, haunting, supernatural, and sometimes just the plain stupid. Join me, your host, Cody Franks, and your co-host,
Garth Von Onen. That's me. Hi, everybody.
As we journey all around the realms of the paranormal sciences to look with a critical and skeptical eye at various and sundry topics such as
spontaneous human combustion,
talking mongooses,
various frozen hominids,
St. Elmo's Fire,
and the Mothman,
and also an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation for some reason,
and a couple scripted radio play holiday specials. So join us every other week for a fun and hopefully entertainingly informative dive into all manner of spooky and strange occurrences, people, places, and things.
Nouns.
The
Least Haunted Podcast.
Because the only thing that's haunted is you.
But for now, we're done. But we'll see you next time.
Across the Fair.